You spend enough time in these woods, and you'll start to feel them watching you. That's not some poetic metaphor. I mean it. The forest watches you, listens, learns. My name's Ben Carter. I've been with Search and Rescue in the White Mountain National Forest for 11 years. Long enough to see the cracks in reality around here. Long enough to know that some of the cases we close were never really solved. And some never can be. We got a call at 3:47 p.m. last fall. Family of four, hiking the Champney Falls Trail, pretty popular spot. It's moderate, not dangerous unless you wander off the path. Which is exactly what they said their 8-year-old son, Jake, did. One second he was there, the next, gone. No sound, no scream, just disappeared. It happens more than you'd think, too often to make sense. By 4:20 p.m., I was on the trail with my partner Heather and a few other volunteers. We spread out, called his name, followed the typical missing child protocol. But even then, something was off. I noticed it first. The woods were silent. Not the usual quiet of the deeper forest either. I'm talking unnatural silence. No birds, no wind, no bugs buzzing around your ears. Just dead air, like the forest itself was holding its breath. Heather noticed it too. She stopped mid-step and gave me a look.
"You feel that?" she asked.
"Yeah," I said, hand resting on the grip of my flashlight even though the sun was still up. We kept pushing through the trees, scanning with thermal. Nothing. Not a single heat signature beyond our own. Not even a damn squirrel. Then, just as we were about to loop back to regroup, we heard something that froze us in place. A giggle. High-pitched, childlike, echoing between the pines.
"Jake?"
Heather called out, voice cautious. No answer. Just that same giggle again, farther off. We exchanged a glance and I nodded. She took the left and I went right, both veering towards the sound. That was the last I saw of Heather for over 6 hours. I don't remember blacking out. One second I was pushing through the underbrush, the next I was on my back, staring up at the canopy. It was dusk. My watch was cracked, radio dead. Everything felt wrong. Like I had slipped through a crack into somewhere else. I heard rustling up ahead, and against every instinct screaming at me to run, I got to my feet and followed it. Something was moving through the trees. Big, upright, but with this unnatural glide to its motion, like it wasn't really walking, just drifting. That's when I saw it. It was holding a child's backpack. Jake's. But whatever this thing was, it wasn't human. It was tall, at least 7 feet, and covered in mottled bark-like skin that blended with the trees. Its head was wrong, elongated, with no visible mouth, just slits where a nose should be and 2 wide reflective eyes like an animal caught in headlights. And it was watching me.
I don't know how long we stood like that. Me frozen in place, it with Jake's backpack in hand. Then it let out a clicking sound, high and fast, like a cicada, and turned, vanishing deep into the trees with impossible speed. I gave chase, because that is what we're trained to do. But this thing didn't leave footprints. It didn't break branches. It just vanished into the dusk like a ghost of the forest. Eventually, I found Heather, disoriented, pale, bleeding from a cut above her eye. She didn't remember anything. Just a sharp sound, like something screaming inside her skull, and then nothing until I shook her awake. We never found Jake. They ruled it exposure. Said he wandered too far and succumbed to the elements. But we never found a body. Just his backpack, folded neatly at the base of an old pine tree 20 miles from the trail. No prints, no signs of a struggle. Just that same dead silence. But that wasn't the end. Because now, I've started seeing it again, in the trees behind my cabin, in the reflection of the river when the moon's just right. It's watching me, and I think it wants me to follow it back. I know what you're thinking. Why the hell would I go after that thing? Why not just pack up, go home, and try to forget? Because I can't. Because every time I close my eyes, I see that thing's gaze burning into me, those hollow, gleaming eyes that know my name somehow. It left Jake's backpack for me to find. It wanted me to see it, like it was inviting me. So, two nights ago, I followed it. I didn't tell anyone. Left a note on the table that said I was heading to Mount Chukura for an overnight recon. Lie, of course, but plausible enough. I packed a light, just a flashlight, flare gun, sidearm, and thermal gear, and made my way to the tree where we had found Jake's backpack. It was just past 11 p.m. when I got there. The forest felt off again. The air was thicker, harder to breathe. Moonlight barely made it through the canopy. But I waited, silent, watching. And then it came. Not from the shadows out of the tree itself. It stepped through the bark like it was mist, peeling itself free from the trunk with that same sickening clicking sound. Taller than I remembered. Thinner. Its limbs stretched too far when it moved, joints bending the wrong way. I raised my flashlight and it stopped, tilted its head, then it pointed. Not with a finger, with its whole arm, which extended like taffy towards a black gap between two pines. That gap, it shouldn't have been there. I don't mean metaphorically. I mean it was literally wrong. Like someone had cut out a slice of reality. Trees bent around it like they didn't want to be near it. The wind pulled towards it like it was breathing in. I stepped closer, and the creature vanished again, melted backwards into the tree like it was never there. I couldn't turn back. But I didn't. I stepped through. And instantly, the air changed. Cold, damp, heavy. The forest on the other side was the same, but not. Like someone had copied White Mountain National Forest from memory and gotten the details wrong. The trees were too still. The ground pulsed slightly beneath my boots. And the sky. There was no moon. No stars.
just a swirling, low-hanging fog that never moved. That's when I heard them. Voices. Children's voices. Crying, laughing, whispering. I followed the sounds for what felt like hours. Time didn't move right in there. My watch spun wildly. GPS was dead. Compass needle kept twitching, pointing nowhere. Then I found shoes. Dozens of them. Lined up neatly along a moss-covered log. Little sneakers, sandals, hiking boots. All kid sizes. Some new. Some old and caked in mold. A few I recognized from missing persons reports. My stomach turned, but I kept going, gripping my flare gun like it was my only tether to sanity. Eventually, I reached a clearing. In the center, rising out of the earth like a tumor, was something I still can't fully explain. It was a tree, but not a tree. Twisted, blackened roots coiled like ribs around a gaping vertical hollow. Inside, something moved, slithering, breathing, watching. Children's voices echoed from inside it, calling for help. And I knew somehow that Jake was in there. Alive. Or part of him was. I stepped closer, and the clicking began again, louder, faster, surrounding me. I wasn't alone. Shapes emerged from the woods, tall, bark-covered things, hunched and wrong, like twisted scarecrows made from tree limbs and bone. A dozen of them, their eyes glowed faintly in the fog. They weren't attacking. They were waiting for me to choose, to step into the hollow, to give myself to whatever was inside. Maybe to save Jake. Maybe to take his place. And in that moment, I had a choice. I didn't move towards the hollow. I couldn't. Because something deep in my bones told me if I stepped into that opening, I'd never come back. Not the same. Maybe not at all. Jake's voice was coming from it now, calling my name, begging, whimpering like he was right there, just out of sight. But I knew better. That thing inside the hollow, it was mimicking him. The clicking sounds from the creatures grew louder, closer, like a swarm of locusts crawling just beneath my skin. I backed away slowly, fingers trembling as I reached for the flare gun strapped to my chest. You don't get taught what to do when you cross into another world, but I knew one thing. Light cuts through dark. I fired straight into the air. The flare ignited with a deafening snap, painting the forest in blinding red light. Shadows recoiled. The clearing lit up like a war zone. For the first time, I saw the creatures clearly. And God help me. They weren't made of bark. They were wearing it. Wrapped into pieces of the forest, stitched into it. Faces stretched beneath the surface like masks, hollow-eyed and screaming. Some of them looked human. No. Had been human. Their mouths opened, but they didn't scream. They just gapped, jawbones cracking wide like a snake's. The flare light drove them back, their limbs twitching and jerking like puppets cut from their strings. The hollow shuddered, reacting violently to the light. That twisting tree thing cracked and split down the middle,
spilling a cloud of black spores that smelt like blood and rust. Something inside screeched, not like a person, not like an animal. Like the forest itself was in agony. I ran. I didn't look back. Branches clawed at me like fingers. The ground sucked at my boots. At one point, I swear I saw one of those things crawling alongside me, half in the dirt like a worm with arms. But I didn't stop. Eventually, the fog began to thin. I found the same gap in the trees, the slice into the world I had come through, still pulsing faintly, still there. I dove through it without thinking, and landed hard on the real forest floor. The sounds came rushing back instantly. Crickets, wind, the babble of a distant river. It was like waking from a nightmare you weren't asleep for. I crawled out past the tree line just as the sun was starting to rise. Skin torn, coughing black dust, ears ringing. I collapsed on the dirt road and just laid there until a ranger patrol found me 3 hours later. They asked me what had happened. I told them that I had gotten lost. No radio signal. Claimed I had fallen and hit my head. I lied. Because even I didn't know how to explain what I had seen. And I'm not sure it would have mattered. We never found Jake. No trace. No remains. Just like so many others. But I saw what takes them, or what lures them. And I think it wants more. Because now I'm not just seeing it in the woods. I'm seeing it in my dreams. And a week ago, when I woke up in the middle of the night, I found something on my porch. A child sneaker. Still warm. Still damp. Still ticking. As we pressed deeper into the heart of the forest, the distant howl cut through the silence. It was haunting. The sound felt alive, reverberating through the very marrow of our bones. I could see it in my teammates' eyes, that flicker of fear. We were rangers, trained, prepared. Yet something primal gripped us. When we finally stumbled upon the body, the sight was more than we could bear. Shredded flesh, a grotesque mosaic of what was once a man. The gruesome scene left us paralyzed. I fought back the urge to vomit. Fear morphed into dread as we shared stolen glances, each silently questioning what we had witnessed. Distant talk floated in the air, whispers. What could have done this? The words echoed amongst us like a curse. Something was in these woods. And whatever it was still nearby. We should have felt urgency, but the overwhelming horror left us immobilized. It was as if the trees themselves conspired against us, watching with their twisted branches. One ranger, Mark, broke the silence.
We need to go.
His voice trembled, betraying the calm facade he tried to project. The rustle of leaves galvanized us into action. We turned, bolting back, driven by instinct more than reason. The shadows danced around us, branches snapping underfoot, tugging at our clothing like grasping fingers, demanding we stay. The howling grew louder behind, as if the unseen beast relished in our terror. Every corner we turned,
Every crack of a branch sent shivers racing down our spines. The forest, once a domain, felt like a claustrophobic nightmare, closing in as we ran. The SUV seemed farther away with every frantic step. The familiar became foreign, the sense of safety twisted into a cruel joke. I could hear my heart pounding, drowning out all other sounds, except for the insidious howl that echoed in my mind, never letting go. Finally, we bursted through the tree line, skidding to a halt at the parking lot. My breath came in gasps, each inhale filled with the acrid smell of fear. When the doors of the SUV shut behind us, I thought we were safe. But as I glanced at my companions, I knew we all carried the horror with us. We had crossed paths with something unimaginable. The woods had swallowed a man and threatened to keep us too. The savage truth lingered in the air, and we would never be the same.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
The sun barely peeked over the horizon when I was called in. A man had gone missing after hiking in the dense woods of Yellowstone National Park. As a park ranger and a member of the search and rescue team, I had seen my fair share of lost hikers, but something felt different about this one. The word missing echoed ominously in the mind of everyone who heard it. We gathered at the park office, the mood heavy with anxiety. Alongside me was Corporal Woods, an experienced ranger with years of rugged outdoor experience, and Sarah, a new recruit eager to prove herself. We divided the wooded areas into sectors and prepared to head out. The missing man's name was David, a 42-year-old who had ventured into the park alone. As we grabbed our gear, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Once in the woods, the air turned still. The trees towered above us like ancient giants, their shadows providing cover for secrets untold. We started our search in the area where David was last seen. The silence was deafening, and every rustle of leaves sent shivers down my spine. After a few hours of scouring the underbrush, we found nothing. The deeper we trekked into the woods, the more unsettled I felt. It was as if the forest itself was alive, watching us, judging us. My heart raced as a flicker of movement caught my eye. I turned to see Sarah staring at something, wide-eyed.
"Did you see that?"
she whispered, her voice barely audible. "What did you see?" I asked. My curiosity piqued.
"Over there, near the creek, I thought I saw someone,"
she replied, pointing towards a thicket of trees. We made our way to the area. The creek gurgled softly, and for a moment, I thought we may have found David. But all we found was an old backpack, tattered and caked in mud.
"Could this belong to him?" Woods asked, examining the backpack.
"It's possible," I murmured, unzipping it carefully. Inside, we found a water bottle and a torn map. But there was something else. A bloodied piece of fabric, perhaps from a shirt. Feeling uneasy, I put the backpack back down. The tension grew thick in the air. "We need to report this back to the station," I said. But before we could turn back, a piercing scream echoed through the trees. My blood ran cold. It sounded like a man in despair. Without a word, we dashed deeper into the woods, the scream drawing us in. Suddenly, we stumbled upon a small clearing. In the center stood a jagged rock formation. At its base, we saw a figure slumped against the stone, clothing torn and face pale. "David?" I called out, rushing forward. It wasn't David. It was another hiker, disoriented and trembling. His name was Mark, and he told us he had been hiking nearby, and he too heard the scream. He mentioned something about shadowy figures moving between the trees, chasing him.
"What do you mean?" Woods pressed, looking around as if the shadows would reveal themselves.
"There's something in the woods, something that shouldn't be here,"
Mark stammered, his eyes wide with fear. "Did you see it?" I asked, my voice steadied despite the dread creeping in.
"I saw something, long and dark, and it was fast. It moved like a deer, but it didn't look like one. It had eyes, cold eyes,"
he said, shivering. We tried to comfort him, but his fear was contagious. I glanced around, half expecting to see those cold eyes watching us.
"We need to get you out of here," I insisted. "Can you walk?"
As we helped him to his feet, a low growl rumbled from the shadows. Woods turned towards the noise, his expression shifting to one of alarm.
"We need to leave now," he yelled.
We stumbled back into the direction we came, moving swiftly yet cautiously. My heart raced, and every sound felt magnified. Suddenly, I spotted something, a trail that veered off from our original path.
"This way,"
I shouted, and we charged down the new trail, praying it would lead us back to safety. But the forest was unrelenting. The howls grew closer, echoing as if a pack was hunting us. Mark's energy ebbed, and dread pulled at my gut. We couldn't stop. As we ran, I felt a pressure on my chest. It was as if the trees themselves were closing in, trapping us. Sarah tripped over a root, and Woods whirled back to help her up, but I sensed we were being toyed with.
"Keep going, we can't stop," I yelled, urging them.
The shadows twisted and turned beside us, almost beckoning.
"Look, there!"
Woods shouted, pointing ahead. Just a few steps away stood a shadowy figure, barely visible, staring, watching. Its form was elongated, and the eyes glowed faintly in the dark. We froze, paralyzed by its eerie presence.
"Run!"
I yelled, and instinct kicked in. We pushed forward with raw adrenaline, hearing the figure growling behind us. The howls were almost deafening. I felt the rush of wind as whatever it was lunged. We sprinted with everything left within us until suddenly we broke through the tree line. Gasping, we stumbled into the open air, the clearing revealing our park office in the distance. We didn't stop to catch our breath. We ran straight towards it, bursting through the door.
"What happened?" the other rangers demanded.
"It's hunting us,"
I gasped, still feeling the cold breath of the shadows on my neck. We gathered what we could to search for David again, but as night fell, it became evident that he was lost.
Days turned into weeks, and no signs of him emerged. Only rumors of the creature lurking in the woods, a constant reminder of the horrors we had faced. Even today, the memory haunts me. I still work as a park ranger, but I never forgot those moments in those woods, where shadows flicker just out of sight, and the thought of a man lost to the darkness lingers in the air. As the weight of the woods bears down, I know they hold secrets, ones that should remain hidden. The crisp mountain air bit at my cheeks as I joined the search party. Ranger Miller, a grizzled veteran with eyes that had seen too much, briefed us.
Missing hiker John Davies, 41 years old, vanished yesterday afternoon at the Eagle Peak Trail. Experienced hiker, supposedly. Let's stick together.
Our team comprised six rangers. Miller, myself, two younger recruits, Sarah and Ben, and two seasoned trackers, Old Man Finn and his silent partner, a massive lumbering dog named Shadow. The trail was initially easy, a well-worn path winding through a pine forest. Sunlight dappled through the trees, casting an eerie play of light and shadow. The silence was unnerving, broken only by the crunch of our boots on the fallen pine needles and the rhythmic panting of Shadow. After a couple of hours, the trail grew steeper, the trees thicker, their branches intertwining to create a gloomy canopy. A sense of unease settled over us. We found a discarded water bottle, half empty, lying near a fallen log. Miller examined it closely.
Davies, he confirmed, his voice low. This is the area where he was last seen, according to his wife.
We pressed on, the air growing colder. The trail disappeared, replaced by a maze of tangled undergrowth. Shadow started sniffing the ground intensely, letting out a growl that sent shivers down my spine. He pulled Finn towards a thicket of thorny bushes. Parting the branches, we found a small, crudely drawn symbol etched into the bark of a tree, a spiral with a strange, jagged line running through its center. None of us recognized it. The atmosphere changed. The air felt heavy, the silence deeper, more oppressive. The sounds of nature, the birdsong, the rustling leaves vanished. An unnatural quiet had descended upon the forest. As we continued, we noticed more of the symbols scratched onto the trees and rocks. The symbols grew larger, more frequent, their jagged lines seemed to writhe and shift in our peripheral vision. Sarah, the youngest ranger, started whimpering.
"It feels wrong,"
she whispered, her voice trembling. Ben, usually unflappable, looked pale. Even Miller seemed troubled. Only Finn and Shadow remained outwardly calm, though I noticed Finn's grip on his walking stick tighten. We stumbled upon a clearing. It was horrifying. The ground was scarred, the trees twisted and broken as if by some immense force. In the center of the clearing laid a crude altar of sorts, constructed from broken branches and rock. Upon it rested a collection of oddly shaped stones, each one intricately carved with the same spiraling symbol. The air here was thick with a sickeningly sweet odor, something cloying and unnatural. Then we saw him. John Davies. He wasn't dead. Not exactly. He was different. His eyes were wide, vacant, staring blankly ahead. His skin was pale, almost translucent,
his body contorted in an unnatural posture. He was alive, yet he wasn't alive. There was no pulse, no breath, yet he moved slowly, mechanically, his limbs twitching, his eyes tracking our movements with a chilling precision. A low moan escaped his lips, a sound not human, but something ancient, something evil. The moan resonated with the sickening sweetness that filled the air, growing in intensity until it was a guttural, deafening scream. The ground beneath our feet trembled. The trees around the clearing seemed to writhe, their branches thrashing wildly. The symbols carved into the trees and rocks pulsated with an eerie inner light. Shadow lunged at Davies, but Finn restrained him.
"Don't touch him,"
Finn warned, his voice barely a whisper, his eyes wide with terror.
"Whatever it is, it's not human anymore."
Davies began to rise, his body contorting into an unnatural shape. His movements were not the result of muscle action. They were grotesque and unnatural, like a puppet being manipulated from some unseen realm. Panic seized us. We turned and fled, the terrifying moans and the unnatural sounds of the forest chasing us. We didn't stop running until we had reached the main trail, our breath ragged, our hearts pounding, the image of John Davies, that horrifying creature, buried into our minds. We never found out what happened to Davies. The authorities dismissed our report, citing exhaustion and hallucination. But we know what we saw. We know what lurks in the depths of that forest. The unsettling memories still haunt me. The spiraling symbol appears in my dreams, its jagged lines writhing, twisting, forever branded into my subconscious. And every time I step into the woods, I hear that chilling moan, a haunting reminder of the horrors we uncovered that day. Even after all these years, the chilling sweetness of that air continues to plague me. The fear remains as vivid as the events of that day. The forest holds its secrets, and some secrets are better left undisturbed. The summer air hung heavy and humid as we began our search. I was part of the Eagle Peak search and rescue team, and a little boy named Tommy had wandered off from his family on a hiking trail. The sun dipped below the horizon, painting the sky in fiery hues, but the beauty was lost on us. We were focused, our flashlights cutting through the growing darkness. Our team leader, a grizzled veteran named John, divided us into pairs. I was paired with Sarah, a young but experienced tracker. We moved slowly, our eyes scanning the undergrowth, our ears straining for any sound. The forest, usually a place of tranquility, felt oppressive, the shadows stretching and twisting into monstrous shapes. The air grew colder, and a damp mist began to roll in, obscuring our vision. We called out Tommy's name, our voices echoing through the silent woods. Silence, except for the rustling of leaves and the distant hoot of an owl. The silence was unnerving, a vast, empty space where a child's laughter should have been. Hours crawled by. We found broken twigs, a discarded juice box, and a small, muddy sneaker, each discovery a fresh stab of anxiety. Around midnight, another search party found a small figure huddled under a large oak tree near a stream. It was Tommy. He was scared, cold, and hungry, but otherwise unharmed. Relief washed over us, a wave of immense gratitude. We gathered around him, wrapping him in blankets. John contacted Tommy's family, their voices crackling with relief through the radio. The initial joy was short-lived. As we started to pack up, John pointed towards a shadowy area near the oak. Initially, we thought it was debris. As we moved closer, a collective gasp escaped our lips. It wasn't debris. It was bones. Human bones. They were scattered amidst the roots of the ancient oak, partially hidden by leaves and moss. They were old, very old, bleached almost white. A chilling silence descended upon us, replacing the earlier relief. The discovery was jarring, a stark contrast to the happy reunion we had just witnessed. We carefully marked the location and reported our findings to the authorities. The news spread quickly. Investigators arrived, their faces grim as they examined the remains. They found a few personal items, fragments of clothing, and a tarnished silver locket engraved with a woman's name. A name that was surprisingly familiar to a name mentioned in local folklore. The folklore spoke of a woman who had vanished near Eagles Point decades ago, lost while hiking. Her disappearance had never been solved. Was this her? Days turned into weeks. The investigation continued. The bones were sent for forensic testing, and the locket yielded a few clues. We learned that the woman had been hiking alone, had been a skilled botanist. The locket contained a rare flower found only at higher elevations of Eagle's Peak. The flower wasn't blooming when we found the bones. We returned to Eagle's Peak several times during the remaining weeks of summer. We searched the area around the oak tree for any further clues. Each time we found something more disturbing. More fragments of bone, a corroded metal clasp that looked like it may have been from a backpack, and a faded photograph tucked inside a small, decaying leather-bound book partially buried in the earth. The photo showed the same woman whose name was on the locket, but much younger. The photo was disturbing. It showed a woman standing at the foot of Eagle Peak, smiling faintly, but her eyes held an unnatural emptiness. An emptiness that sent shivers down my spine. The more we looked, the more we found, the deeper the mystery grew. It seemed like a macabre game of hide and seek, the forest itself guarding its secrets. As the summer ended, and as we prepared for the winter months, the investigation remained a mystery. The bones were confirmed to be human, but identifying the victim proved difficult. The condition of the remains made positive identification nearly impossible. It seemed the forest had slowly consumed the evidence along with its secrets. But what about Tommy? Why had he been near the burial site? Had he stumbled upon it unintentionally? Or was there something more sinister at play? These questions haunted me. I started having nightmares. Nightmarish visions of the woman in the photo, her vacant eyes staring directly at me, the image echoing of the endless emptiness of the woods. The forest, once a peaceful sanctuary, was now a place of dread, a constant reminder of the darkness it concealed. Each rustle of leaves, each snap of a twig sent a jolt of fear through me. The memory of the bone fragments, the locket, the photograph, all became a haunting reminder of the night's terrifying discovery. It felt like the forest was still trying to tell its secrets, secrets that I could never fully comprehend. The forest had given us back Tommy, but it had also taken something from me, replacing my summer adventure with the chilling nightmare that haunted my dreams. The unsettling discovery was a constant reminder of the mysteries that lie hidden within the seemingly serene landscapes. I left the Eagle Peak search and rescue team a short time later. Even now, months later, the memory of the bones, the locket, and the photograph linger in my memory. The image of the woman with vacant eyes haunts my dreams. I know I will never forget that night. Never forget the chilling secrets hidden beneath the silent trees of Eagle Peak. The forest, once a symbol of peace and tranquility, had revealed a sinister reality that left an enduring mark on my soul. And to this day, the mystery remains.